Welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 12, The Yards from 2000. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. With us today, first-time guest of the podcast, long-time guest in the Cage Club Podcast Network family, Zach Dazon. Hello, Zach.
Hello.
How are you?
Not bad. Yourself? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. This is going to come out in end of February, but Happy New Year nonetheless.
It's still new in February.
Welcome to the throne.
Thank you.
Welcome to the throne. You have joined us for one of, I'm going to go out there on a limb, Mike, one of the three best movies we've done so far out of 12.
Slim pickings. But
Slim pickings. Would you agree?
Would I agree? It is not in my top three.
Oh.
Really? Okay.
No, it's not.
Wow. Okay. So we'll get to it. I think, before we get further, I think you could convince me this is a masterpiece. I don't think it is.
Whoa.
I gave it like 3.5. I sort of spent a lot of the movie going back and forth in terms of appreciating how little happens and then also wishing more happened.
Same.
But at the end of the day, I really like this.
Me too. I thought it was very like understated and subtle and filmic, very filmic. That's a good word for it. Yeah, you could easily convince me it's a masterpiece, also. But yeah, it's as I have it, it's a 4 out of 5 for me.
Whoa, I don't know. I'm spinning. I mean, there's more than just nice cinematography in this movie. I'll start there. Usually, that's my one saving grace. Like, I don't hate this movie by any stretch of the imagination, but I do not see what you guys see in this film. Like, I was with it. I liked how it was starting. I loved that opening party scene in the apartment. And then I don't know. I just got bored, kind of confused. Mark Wahlberg is just not helping. And Charlize's role is pretty minor. I was not really into this one, guys.
Mm. I think Mark Wahlberg's really good in this.
Me too.
Whoa.
I agree that Charlize should have and could have more to do, but I think Mark Wahlberg and Joaquin Phoenix are both really, really good in this, and so is James Caan.
Right. Just because we have an axe to grind, you know, in terms of Charlize, doesn't mean that, you know, the movie is bad because she's not a big part of it. Yeah, Wahlberg was all right. I really liked Joaquin. I mean, I'm a big Joaquin man, so.
I agree with Joaquin. Like, I got a bit of his Johnny Cash vibe in this movie. He definitely has the greaser sort of look, which is fine. It translates into his character well. Like, I liked him. I James Caan was all right. Like, I don't know. Mark Wahlberg, I guess it's, for me, I just felt like he was doing Rocky. Like, he's kind of mumbling. He's very low key. Like, I understand the movie is sort of low key.
Oh, but everybody
also
mumbles. Also, I was one of my notes. Yeah. There's so much mumbling. There's the, like,
too much.
Like, nobody, everyone has his marbles in their mouth. It's definitely a thing.
I guess I just expected his sort of life after prison to be a little, I don't know. He's kind of like a dummy. Actually, that was hurting me too. Like, I had troubles with, like, the whole thing that he gets involved with. Like, that for me is where,
well, he's
I
the
was
family
just kind of
dummy. He's their punchy. The whole reason he was in prison in the first place is because he took the fall for them. He's clearly that's why they value him, is because he's a dummy.
I think a lot of the movies that are similar to this, in that they follow a guy getting out of prison. I mean, it's not about him, but, you know, Drive, when Oscar Isaac gets out of prison, like, he falls right back into a life of crime too. And, like, I believe it. I buy it. I think, you know, it's a story that I've seen before, but I'm into it.
Yeah, we had that Keanu movie with James Caan when he came out of prison. And they were going to rob a bank or something, and they ended up putting on a play. You remember that one?
Oh, what was, like, that movie? Jess Knight was on that episode. It was with Vera Farmiga. Henry's Crime,
yeah. I mean,
This is a much better movie than Henry's Crime.
Yes. This is not a comedy, or doesn't think it's funny by any means. It's very serious. I guess what was throwing me was, like, the whole thing is about the train yard, like, the corruption behind the scenes of the New York City transit system. That was just like, I was like, that's what?
That's
like,
it was a real thing. It was based on a real scandal in 1980.
Oh, I wish I was a little more privy to that, because I just was not engaged in that central storyline. So that was a trouble for me.
So, you know, this is directed by James Gray, who most recently just did The Lost City of Z. We talked
no
about
shit.
Him.
This is him?
I was wondering what else he did.
Yeah, we talked about him either on A Cinemakers or maybe just when you and me and Tobin were talking about it, but he also did The Immigrant, that movie with Marion Cotillard.
I brought him up during Che because of the Bolivian jungle.
This is written by him and Matt Reeves.
Yeah, I saw
who
that.
Who went on to do the Planet of the Apes movies and, like, a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
I wish I knew he directed this, because I love Lost City of Z so much.
I need to see that.
So, yeah, so the film was based on a real-life corruption scandal in the mid-80s that involved the father of co-writer and director James Gray. So this is something that matters to him, that he cares about.
I did not pick up on the time period. They mentioned the blackout at one point, but I didn't know what blackout they were referring to or if it was just fictional, but... I didn't get a sense of time like that. I wish I knew more that it was based on a true story.
Was there a title or a time card in the beginning? Did they say? I don't remember. I remember being a little confused.
And it also doesn't, I don't think it really establishes place really well. Like, I just sort of assumed for a little bit it was Boston. I'm like, oh, no, it's Queens.
Just because it's Marky Mark, it's always Boston.
Exactly. I was like, Charlize with a Boston accent. I was like, oh, wait, no, that's just a New York accent. I guess that's not, it's just her with an accent, which we haven't heard yet, I don't think.
Hi, Editor Joey here again for what feels like my second time in as many weeks, but who knows? I can't tell. I can't keep track of the time anymore. We have heard Charlize with an accent before. We've heard her down south in The Devil's Advocate and Cider House Rules, but this is a new accent, so that's all I was trying to say. Back to the show.
He translates fine from like Boston to New York. I don't feel like Marky skips a beat during that. Charlize? Like,
a little weird.
I don't know. This is like another sort of moment like Cider House Rules, where I just feel like she's a little miscast here, because she could do this standing on her head. Like, she's done stuff like this already, like, way better, where she's just sort of like the trophy. You know, she's like the furniture, like the trophy wife or something. I think it's a little deeper in this. I think it's a little deeper. But for the most part, she's Joaquin Phoenix's hot girlfriend. She's Marky Mark's hot cousin. And I just feel like she's a little just miscast. She doesn't have like, she doesn't look sort of tough enough. Like, everyone else in the movie looks tough.
Oh, she looks tough in a, you know, weird way. She looks like 11, you know, in season 2 of Stranger Things.
Yeah, she's very like late 80s tough, like Blade Runner. She almost looks like Pris in Blade Runner in a few moments.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's miscast or not. I don't think that it's fair. I think there's too much going on here. I think you started alluding to this, to like trivialize her as the trophy girlfriend. It feels like, I think that's another reason why I thought it was Boston, because there's like this real familial thing, which I guess is similar between the two cities. All the guys kind of protect the girls, but the girls can also hold their own. And then you add the extra layer that, like, when they were 15, she and Mark Wahlberg were in a relationship, and it's just like, oh, like, there's a lot happening here.
It was really glossed over, and suddenly at the end of the movie.
Could we just get there?
Yeah, let's get there. But, like, so from the very first shot, right, so Mark Wahlberg comes back to the apartment. We see him look at her, and I'm like, oh, they're gonna fuck. And then
dude,
you find out that they're cousins.
It didn't
and I was
come
like,
out of nowhere.
I'm like, they're still gonna fuck.
I
didn't
like,
care.
Huh.
Yeah, well, I was actually glad they gave us the closure on that. Yeah, it was building the entire movie. I'm like, what is up with these guys?
I must have dozed off, because I didn't even pick up that when they were 15 or whatever that they were involved. I just thought that in this movie they needed to fuck.
No. It's like sort of swept under the rug toward the end. But I think James Caan, somebody's talking to Joaquin Phoenix about like their history and about, is it the mom? And about how they were super close, and one time when they were 15 she
they
walked
got caught
in on
together,
them.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Because James Caan's not her, that's her stepdad, we find out.
Right.
That threw me also. I thought something was gonna happen there when she goes to visit him in the office, and I was like, cringe.
The family relations were a little bit muddy. I wasn't entirely keeping up with it.
Yeah, and I thought that Joaquin was Marky Mark's, I'm sorry to call him Marky, but his character is Leo. I thought he was Leo's brother. I was like, wait, they're not brothers? Like,
they're
halfway through
they're
the
not
movie.
Related, I don't think, right?
They expect you to
they're just
pick up
really
on a
good
lot.
Friends.
In the beginning, he was like, how do you like your new mother or whatever? Like, how do you like your new father? I forget. I'm not good
that
enough.
Was strange,
at that.
Too, when Mark Wahlberg goes to meet James Caan for the first time. I'm like, how is he meeting his uncle for the first time? And then I had to put it together that, like, oh, he was in prison and this is his step uncle.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, I guess it's plausible.
So I think what the confusion comes from is that this is such a family focused movie and, like, a family business, and, like, Joaquin Phoenix is just there, not even by marriage yet. Like, I mean, he kind of proposes in the middle of the movie and they break it off by the end, but feels like he's central.
So to speak.
Well, I mean, it's
I love how you just put it. Like,
well, it's incest. Why not necrophilia?
This is, Zach, believe it or not, this is the fifth time in 12 movies that Charlize has died.
Yeah. I just stood up and I was like, there it is. Like, I can't believe it.
Probably like the 9th or 10th time that she got naked, and she didn't have to get naked with this movie.
That really made me mad. Like, it was such a gratuitous topless shot, because the scene was basically over, and then you could almost hear the director off screen go, take your shirt off, take your shirt off, and like her just take her top off for no reason, and then they fall back onto the couch. I was just so upset about that. I mean, that's weird that I was upset to see like a topless girl, especially Charlize, but it just felt so unnecessary.
The moment didn't seem as unearned to me when I was watching it. I don't know, I didn't...
Because I liked what was happening in that moment. Joaquin had just murdered some dude. You know, he didn't intend to or anything. And, like, she wants him. Like, she's really turned on right then. And, like, he had, you know, like, that's a very sort of interesting moment there.
And she's kind of consoling him.
Yeah, and he doesn't really want it or can't process what's been going on. Again, like, I don't think it's a bad movie. And, like, I think there's stuff here and everything. I just wish, I don't know, stuff was a little more clear or things were a little more exciting, maybe. I guess I was just thrown off by how much, like, we're going to be going to, like, meetings and things like that.
Well, so I think it's clear enough. I mean, maybe you just fell asleep at the wrong parts. It reminded me also of Act of Vengeance a little bit, the Charles Bronson movie about the unions, right?
Like,
where it's the very early Keanu Club movie where there's just stuff going on behind the scenes. Like, James Caan seems like an upstanding citizen, but he's crooked in a way that's sort of accepted, right? Like, he's doing things the right way, even though he's getting rich because of it. I don't think it's unfair to say, although, Mike, you might get mad, Zach and I were talking about this a little bit before you popped on, but, like, there's definitely heavy Godfather vibes here, and it's just
I picked up on some, yeah.
Backroom machinations, and, like, especially with James Caan there, but just sort of the early on the Godfather, before, like, you know, people start getting whacked. I mean, people do die in this movie, but, like, you know, it's
no,
just
but
a
like
lot
the
of
politics
like,
the of crime.
Setups. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All the backdoor dealings. You know, you got the senator in your pocket. The cops are on. They're all crooked. Yeah. I definitely see that. I'm not upset about that connection whatsoever. I just, you know, I almost wish they played it up more. Like, it's interesting that the Joaquin Phoenix is the most interesting character because he's like this outsider in a lot of ways, you know, but they don't really use that a lot. Like, they treat him more like an insider than, you know, someone in the family, and that's interesting, and I just wish that was a little more central.
This could have been a really good 3-hour movie.
Yes.
I think you're right. Yes, maybe it would have benefited from an extra 20 minutes.
So now what's weird, Mike, Zach and I were also talking about this before, that there are two cuts of this movie. There's the director's cut and the theatrical cut. I think we all watched the director's cut, which is 2 minutes longer, and ends with him testifying against the family.
Well, Wikipedia says it's the other way around.
It's the other way around?
Yeah, Wikipedia says the non-director's cut ends with him testifying. The director's cut...
Oh!
Yeah, the director's cut ends with him just leaving.
Because that is necessary, because that's like his entire arc right there. Like, he went to prison for not switching. And I actually think that's Mark Wahlberg's, one of his best moments on screen at all. It's like I finally feel like I'm seeing him break down and do stuff that out of his shell, and he doesn't seem like he's acting in that moment. Like, it almost feels like he's drawing from, you know, his youth when he might have ratted on some friends to get out of a situation and like gotten called on it because, you know, he's from those mean streets and stuff. So I actually thought that moment, you know, helped the movie tremendously there at the end. I was like, good, he's testifying and Mark Wahlberg's actually emoting here.
Yeah, it's unclear what we all watched, I think, because it also feels, I mean, but like, I think that that's important at the end. I agree with everything you just said, and I think that that like also gives not only him closure, but the movie closure too. Like, if that doesn't happen and he just rides off, we're just supposed to be like, oh, well, that's just, I guess, still going on? Like, I don't know.
It's very Chinatown in that sense then, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, you can't change anything. There's nothing you can do about it. You might as well just, like, leave town. But that's interesting. Charlize's been in a lot of alternate cuts. I feel like we just did the Reindeer's Game director's cut, which was, like, the steamy, sexy version.
Ugh. And there's the That Thing You Do 40-minute longer cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, that's been a big thing already in Watch the Throne.
So this movie, I don't know if you read this, either of you, but this movie was originally supposed to... It was shot, I think, in 98, and then got shelved for a couple years because of production and studio problems. It was supposed to come out in the summer of 98. No, shot during spring and summer 98. It was supposed to come out in fall 99, but then wound up coming out fall 2000 because of delays. So this is actually before, she filmed this before, I mean, this might come, you know, basically right after Devil's Advocate, maybe, or like shortly after that, so a handful of movies ago. So she's young. She's like 24, 25 in filming this.
I wonder if that can account for her dark hair. Astronaut's Wife, it was short and blonde again right after, so like, I wonder if, like, yeah, that's interesting. Now that you say that, I definitely think everybody looks like younger in this movie than time should have told. But.
And that's like another thing that I think we've popped up a couple times, just to let you know, Zach, is that like a couple times I feel already we've had delays, like production delays, and things are delayed, and like she shot something and something else came out before, and it just, I'm sure that happens all the time, but it didn't feel like something that we read about for Cage or Keanu much. And here, that's at least, I can't remember the other examples, but like two or three times.
she's a production delayer. It must be her fault.
What a diva.
Yeah, really. Man, she'd come to find out, like, it's all of her, like, demands, and it's her rider and everything that they can't fulfill. No.
My hair's not dark enough.
It is kind of interesting, though, the like, she's really, like, in all parts of the system, like, representing, you know, like, she's got comedies, she's done horror, she's doing thrillers, she's had films delayed and come out after other ones have been filmed. Like, it's kind of
she
fun
dies
that way.
And dies
I like
and
the
dies.
Variety. Yeah, she's the most died, the most died actor I've known, but like, yeah, she's died the most, I think, so far out of anyone that we've covered. Like, she's keeping it fun, at least.
Yeah.
And she's also right now in a mini streak of crime movies, at least in terms of what's released, because last week we had Ben Affleck in Reindeer Games, which is crime, and here we got another Boston connection in Wahlberg in a crime movie here. So there's a little bit of a crime spree, if you will, here on Watch the Throne.
Oh man, but this is way better than Reindeer Games. Like, this is a competent film. You know what I'm saying? I just I was thrown off guard because like I basically just read like The Yards, like Mark Wahlberg like works at a train yard, and I thought it was going to be more of like a Taking of the Felon kind of thing, or like a real heist kind of movie. So
well, that's why I fell asleep.
More nodded off. I didn't full on fall asleep, but I mean, like, I think that was why. I think like my expectations were a little sideways. Maybe if I sat down again and gave it another try, I would see another side of it, some more in there somewhere.
Well, I can tell you that America is sort of on your side in that this had a $24 million budget and made less than $900,000 at the box office. So I don't know how it was sold, but people were not into it. I was telling you, though, Mike, before we watched it, I was doing a little bit of research. I saw who was in it. I saw who the director was. I saw who the writers were. I saw a couple of people I follow on Letterboxd whose opinions I generally trust gave it good scores. And I was like, I have a good feeling about this. And so I think I went into this like with an open mind and an open heart. And I was rewarded, I think. If it's not in your top three, where is it on your list?
Okay, so let me see. I have my list right here. I have it six. So,
oh, wow.
But
what?
It's because look, like my list is kind of fucked up. It goes because I have favoritism going on. Like, it's not best movie. It's the movie I like. I would rewatch
okay,
again.
Okay, sure.
So,
yeah.
Devil's Advocate.
Right.
That
same
that
as me.
Thing you do.
Same as me.
Mighty Joe Young.
Way too high, but go on.
Children of the Corn 3.
I guess. Okay. Yeah, sure.
2 Days in the Valley and then The Yards.
Wow. You would rather watch 2 Days in the Valley than this?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it fluctuates. I just assigned it today, so we'll see where it sits after this conversation. But as of now, like, it's in the middle.
What about you, Joey?
I have it wedged right between That Thing You Do at number 2 and Children of the Corn at number 4, so... I really dug this movie. I mean, I don't think this is the kind of movie that you could. Well, maybe it is. I was gonna say I don't think it's the kind of movie that you could watch over and over again. But like, maybe you can.
I bet it would open up. I mean, especially once you know the family ties better. You know
yeah.
All the stuff that confused us better.
I would give the director's cut or whatever other cut the one we didn't watch. Like, I'm actually kind of a fan of that. Like, I always try and want to see the whole everything down. And now I'm really getting into it with like. The stupid novelizations and stuff, and even going back to reading like the source material for some movies just in my spare time and stuff. Like, I'm really becoming a fan of just trying to get the whole story.
Yeah.
Whereas I used to be a guy who was like, hey, whatever was in the theaters, that's all that should be seen, that's what was released. Now I'm more along the lines of I want to kind of see it all. Whereas with Reindeer Games, I wouldn't go back and watch another cut of that movie. With this movie, I definitely would go back and see what the other cut's all about, especially knowing who the director is and more, because I really, again, love Lost City of Z.
I need to see that.
From what we read, I think the difference is just where it ends. So I think, like, the first 98% of the movie is the same. The last scene, I guess, is different. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I would still give it another shot before a lot of other movies. I mean, it's not high on my rewatch list, but it's, you know, it would be on there.
Sounds like we're convincing him it's a masterpiece.
Yes.
Well, no, like, that, I don't think I'm ever going to reach that level, but, you know, I definitely have respect for the film. Like, I now, especially learning the true story side and how closely the filmmakers connected and everything, like, I like that angle, and that will change my perspective of a movie or a piece of art or something like that, you know, and make me reconsider it. So nothing's really set in stone right now.
Mm. And also another thing to point out is the composer, I don't know if you looked this up, is Howard Shore, who did Seven and the Lord of the Rings movies and Silence of the Lambs and Spotlight and The Departed. Like, works with Scorsese a lot.
The score was
works
great.
With Fincher a lot. Score was really, really good. Like, this is a well-made, maybe you could say it's confusing, maybe you could say it's slow, but other than that, like, I don't think there's, like, bad things about it, really. Like, it might not be your cup of tea or what you're looking for to watch or what you're hoping for, but, like, I think behind the scenes and in front of the camera, like, people are nailing it.
Yeah, like, I feel like it's well-directed. I don't feel like it's a confusing movie. I just feel like I was confused just because of, like I said, like, I wasn't expecting this type of movie. Like, I didn't think it was going to be like a slow burning thriller. Like, I thought it was going to have more action, or at least, you know, some more violence, and I just was expecting more of like what I would generally get from a Mark Wahlberg film, I guess, like something just a little more commercial, and this isn't. And I think that's a good thing, you know, like this plays much more like darker indie drama kind of thing that got like studio power behind it, you know, and was able to get a lot of good talent and looks great. It sounds great. It is kind of strange that I had never heard of this movie until we started doing this podcast, you know, like that is kind of a strange thing considering like everybody behind it.
It comes at a point in his career. He had just done Basketball Diaries, Fear, Traveler, Boogie Nights, and he probably filmed this. Like, it's not, he's not like a really commercial actor yet, I don't think. He's still sort of in that like indie scene, so I think it sort of fits. Yeah, I think you know, modern day Mark Wahlberg, you're like, oh, he's the face of the Transformers franchise now or whatever, so like you have that in your head. But here, back here, it's like, oh no, he's still this guy who, like, I really have a difficult time figuring out what women find attractive, I think, but like he's a good looking dude in this movie. Like, I finally get it. Like, I feel like, what? you think he's weird looking in this?
Kinda, yeah. I was gonna sort of comment on his like devolved sort of face, I feel like, I, cause like,
oh, man.
When I grew up, like, Mark Wahlberg was known for selling underwear, and girls loved him because he had an incredibly chiseled body and stuff. I never got it was, like, I always thought he had, like, a mean face or, like, a beat-up, kind, like, a tough face, you know? I didn't think it was ever his good looks or anything like that. Like, I just always considered him to be, like, a tough-looking dude, you know? Like, not a good-looking dude, per se.
Zach,
but
where do you fall? As a third straight guy on this podcast, where do you fall? Is he attractive in this movie or is he not?
Oh, gosh. In this movie, he seems so kind of dumb and kind of like quiet.
But are you attracted to him?
I'm not. No, I can't say I am. But, you know, I'm a sapiosexual. I'm like into the brain, you know?
Then you're definitely not into him.
I don't know. Like, I can't point to a specific, like, but just like early on, like him being like moody on the train, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I get why women would be like, you know, aside from the underwear model and stuff like that. But actually, I have a question for you, Zach, though. Had you seen this movie before? Or if not,
no.
Why did you pick this? Or you just randomly pick one?
I thought I'd heard of it. I don't know. I mean, maybe I was thinking of Stomp the Yard, or I don't know. I don't know.
Well, Charlize was not.
To be honest, I don't know much about Charlize. I was actually going to ask
Turns
you guys.
Turns out that neither do we.
How are we pronouncing her last name? Theron?
It's Theron.
Theron.
So here's how dumb we are. So we named the show Watch the Theron, and then somebody sent us a link of like her telling an interviewer the story of her last name. In South African, it's like Thrun. Like, it's like this really sort of guttural one-syllable word or sound.
Well, we should do that then.
Yeah, it's like that scene in Splash where you can't pronounce the mermaid's name. It's like,
and she comes to America, and her agent is like, you need to Americanize this. And she's like, okay, it's going to be Theron. And then as soon as she did, everyone's like, all right, cool, Charlize Theron. And so, like, even though she tried to play by the game, people don't care. So we named it Watch the Theron, and then before we even recorded our first episode, we're like, well, we're bad. So
her
name is actually Charlize Theron.
Okay, interesting.
That's the charm of us. Like, we just rush into things head on without looking. We stick with it, you know? We commit to the bit.
Well, that's how I pick the yards.
There you go. But like editing these episodes, I'm just like, oh, like We get it wrong all the time. Like, it's you know, I'm trying.
We get it the wrong. Joey coined a wonderful phrase once when Brian was on, and he said, you pronounced that completely the wrong.
Did I? I don't remember that.
It was on one episode. I think it was on an episode of PSI Love Hoffman, I think, or something.
No. Wow, I am smarter than I give myself credit for. All right.
That was clever. Everyone had a great laugh.
You know what kind of annoyed me about this movie, and it's not the movie's fault at all? When the big scene goes down, that they go to the train yard to, like, I guess, mess up some other crew's trains or something, I'm unclear what happens.
Yeah.
I don't care.
That's their competitor. Yeah. They go there and they sabotage fuck up the other guy's train, so they sabotage, so they get all the contracts and shit.
So Joaquin Phoenix goes in to talk to the guy, and he's trying to bribe the guy. The guy's like, no. Mark Wahlberg's out there being a lookout because he just got out of prison, and then a cop comes up, and the cop's like, what are you doing? And then Mark Wahlberg, you know, hits him in the head, guy goes to the hospital. I recognized from his voice that it was David Zayas, a.k.a. Detective Bautista from Dexter, and I was like, yes, I got it, because I can do voices. Terrible at faces, terrible with hair, as Mike knows, but I can do voices. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I looked it up, and I was like, great. And then they just show his face over and over, and I was like, oh, man, like, it's not cool that I know who he is now, because you see him a bunch. I was so proud of myself, and I'm like, we see him in the movie, we see him on TV, like, we see him all, like, there's like, come on, man.
Well, I believe you.
Yeah, I believe you, too. I think that's harder to recognize someone by their voice sometimes. But did you catch the guy on their crew from The Wire? It's been a while since I've watched The Wire, but I don't remember his name. But on that show, he's the big, bald, white dude who eventually becomes, like, a bodyguard.
Herc?
Yeah, in this movie, he's got hair. He's got, like, a little tuft of, like, pubes on his head. There's, like, this curly little, like, bit. And, yeah, he just is like, hey, Leo, yeah, glad you could be part of a crew and everything. He's in, like, two scenes. He's in the party in the beginning, and then he's during that train yard scene.
Huh. Hey, guys, Editor Joey here. While editing this episode, I realized that my audio got really messed up somehow, to the point where it was basically unusable. Mike's track and Zach's track seem fine. I don't know what happened on my end, but it's not good. So instead of scrapping this episode or re-recording or doing another Cider House Rules in Memoriam episode, I also don't know what's happening on the Charlize Theron podcast because, you know, we had no problems with Cage or Keanu, and now all of a sudden Charlize is, like, throwing us all sorts of technical difficulties. So I don't know. I'm sorry about this. But what I'm going to do is, since I was so happy with the episode that we recorded, and, you know, the other tracks are fine, then I'm going to kind of recap and sort of set up what Mike and Zach were talking about and see if I can remember what I was saying. So a little bit of a weird thing here on the back half of this episode, but I hope you enjoy. If you want to turn it off, you can. But we have our Pitch a Sequel game coming up in a little bit, so hopefully you stick around. But just want to let you know what's going on. This first clip, the first thing that I said, that to bridge from Mike talking about Herc in The Wire, is that I said that there was another person that Mike mentioned that he had seen in this movie, a non-actor, if you will. We were all surprised that Mike saw this guy and recognized this guy.
Oh, yeah, and I'm the last person who probably should have recognized this guy because he's a sports figure and pretty major. I think I've turned it more into, like, a persona on the show that, like, one of my, you know, my limp in my eye patch is that I'm not into sports, but I play that up more for the show. But I spied Keith Hernandez in, like, one shot of this movie. Yeah, so, I mean, I recognized him mostly from Seinfeld, although I was alive during the famous game that went down in the 80s. I did know about Keith Hernandez. I'm not, like, a total idiot.
This is all going over my head.
But, I mean, I recognized him because that episode I've seen, like, 1,000 times, and he's only in, like, you know, maybe 10, 15 seconds of this movie. So I took a screenshot and I sent it to Joey and I circled his head in red and I was like, there he is.
Wait, what was he in Seinfeld? Wait, I don't remember this.
Oh, he dated Elaine and then it was the big episode where there was a second spitter, like Kramer, friend of the show, because he and Charlize Theron did a movie together. But Kramer and Newman go to the Mets game and spit on Keith Hernandez and then it became the whole thing and Jerry is asked to move his furniture. So he was on like a two-parter Seinfeld episode as one of Elaine's.
I guess I haven't
friends.
Seen that one.
It's a classic.
Editor Joey again. I said that, you know, he played on the Mets. The Mets played in Queens. Maybe he was just like called onto set, say, hey, be here for an afternoon and, you know, be in this one scene, question mark?
Yeah, right. Meet James Caan, maybe, because yeah. I think that's who he's like in the photo with, or get a free lunch. I don't know.
Editor Joey here again. This is a weird exercise I'm doing. I know that's a weird exercise. I know that I could, in theory, just try to reword what I said and make it seem natural, but like, we're above board here with you on Watch the Throne. We don't want to lie to you. I don't want to make you think that, like, oh, why does he sound a little bit different? Well, because something happened to my audio. What I said in this little gap here was that this movie, though I loved it, though it is a near masterpiece, and I don't care what Mike says, you know, we're going to convince him one day that this is a near masterpiece, I didn't know what to take notes on, and to sort of emulate Mike's thoughts and his opinions on stuff, I said it's the type of movie that I just let wash over me. But then I did point out that I read on IMDb that there was trivia about when Mark Wahlberg and Joaquin Phoenix fight each other in this movie. They agreed to actually fight each other. Although they wore knee and elbow pads, everything on screen is them actually beating each other up. There's no stunts. The entire thing was done over two takes from three different angles. There was also one point where Joaquin Phoenix accidentally hit Charlize Theron, and he also did actually fall down the stairs. So everything you see looks real because it is real.
Well, I was wondering about that. It looked like, I was like, damn, those don't look like doubles. Like, that looked real.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like choreography either. No. Like, I noticed that moment. I was like, ooh, this is the movie. This is like when the movie's working really well for me. It's like these kind of moments where it's like a conventional scene, like something you see, like when the best friends finally go at it, but it's, you know, executed in a way that I've never really felt before. And it really made me feel what the movie was trying to do at that time, where it's like realness and the gritty. And like, this moment is maybe, like, aside from the stabbing and that little like altercation in the yard and the end, where Charlize goes over the rail pretty quickly, there's not a big like fight, but like, this is the fight. This is like the action scene in the entire movie, you know what I'm saying? And like,
you really wanted to watch an action movie, didn't you?
No. But it works really well, like, the more I think about it, because of how sort of tempered the rest of the film is, that like, you get this explosive moment, you know, and it isn't pretty in the sense that they're not doing karate or anything like that. Like, they're actually brawling together. And so, yeah, I really like that part.
Editor Joey back asking, so do you mean it's a near masterpiece?
Well, we're getting there, but we're not quite there yet. It's a piece of something. No?
Editor Joey here once again. Hello. Long time, no talk. But I was saying that there's some other trivia for this movie. They wanted to shoot on an actual train lot. New York City wouldn't let them. They like built the set, but then the last minute they actually got to shoot on the train lot, so that was cool. I said between that and the performances and the look and everything, it sometimes didn't feel like a movie, which I meant as a compliment. It just sort of felt like guys on a train yard, so that was kind of cool. It's a unique type of movie.
I had some notes. Why did he have to use a gun in the hospital to kill a dude? Like, I was just like, pillow, it's quiet.
Yeah, that felt a little drawn out. But I agree, that was a very Godfather type moment too, you know, and like, Michael has to go protect his dad because the guy's gonna come and like kill him while he's in the hospital and everything.
Editor Joey here again. I said that there were a couple scenes with guns in this movie, and I wondered if it was the studio saying that they needed guns because, you know, it might have been like the most boring trailer in history, because this is not a movie where a lot of things happen. And I wonder if the studio was like, hey, we need to sell this, you need to put guns in there. Zach asked if none of these guns go off. I said there was a little bit of gunfire. You know, there's a shootout in an apartment. You know, Joaquin Phoenix sends a hitman to kill Mark Wahlberg, but it's not John Wick.
Yeah. Joaquin Phoenix's skin was so smooth it looked like CG at times. Did you guys get that?
That's awesome.
I said, so while I'm looking at Mark Wahlberg, you're looking at Joaquin Phoenix?
100% would do. That dude is the best. I've had a crush on him since Gladiator.
He's great in 8mm, Cage Club. Check out 8mm. That's sort of a gem.
I said his name was Max California, which is just a great name.
Yeah, one of the best names. I Be Bangin' is the name I remember most from Cage Club.
One of the guys writes checks for his bribes. I thought that seemed like bad behavior. Oh, yeah, and oh, the nudity scene where they get naked to do the handoff. I thought that was like, what am I watching? Oh. Are they about to...
See...
I thought it was like, is it corruption or is it like homosexuality? Like, it's like the real story is they're fucking.
So the deal there was the dude's paranoid about wires, and I can't believe Marky Mark never put on a wire. Like, I thought that was all a setup because that's how they were going going to catch him at the end, was he was going to wear a wire and forget to check him or something. But that's another moment that I enjoyed, because I was like, whoa, this is like a scene you see all the time. Two guys meeting in private somewhere in the middle of nowhere, but then there's this extra step where they're fucking butt naked, you know? I'm like Mark Wahlberg, I'm like, what the fuck is that about, you know? And then he gets in the car and explains it, and, you know, I buy it, and it's so random and weird, but it works really well because it's new and like different, you know, and it's got a weird Sopranos vibe to that moment, you know, where it's just like, let's get this fucking over with, you know, and like, take your goddamn clothes off, give me the fucking money, and let's get out of here, kind of thing. Maybe Leo's checking him out. I don't know. Maybe that's the male gaze taking.
It's the only time you can have a conversation if you're afraid of wires. Yeah.
There you go. Maybe he's telling him about like all the other shit in his life. He can't ever tell anyone. It's like his therapy session.
That was hilarious. I mean, that's kind of, I think, what makes it so artful, is that all the places you expect Chekhov's gun to go off, it doesn't. You know, it's not constructed. It just kind of is. Like, it goes from point A to B to C and not back to A, you know?
Yeah, and especially, like, the climax is a handshake in the back of, like, a courthouse. Like, it's climactic for the story, but visually it's very anticlimactic seeming. Mm. But it does work. And again, I think, like, that's a good note for the movie. Like, I don't think a trial is this movie isn't supposed to have a trial scene, you know what I'm saying? Like, the trial scene takes place behind closed doors between all of the paid off officials making like a sleazy deal together. And that's a nice moment too.
So, you know what other movie didn't need a trial scene?
USS
Indianapolis, Men of Courage.
Oh my gosh. USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage. When Cage goes on trial at the end because they have to cover it up because it was a covert mission, and then he goes home and blows his brains out.
That was a bad one.
During that anniversary, like, they were just coming out about, like, the whole thing, how it was a secret mission, and then at the time, like, he got blamed for everything, and so he killed himself in disgrace.
Yeah.
So, that was a bummer ending.
Poor Cage.
Joey here again. I had mentioned that as we were recording this, I had just seen The Post the night before, and it was a movie that I really liked but didn't like the way that I thought I was going to like because I had perceptions going into it. This is all sort of a tangent. I don't remember exactly how I got into this, but I was saying about how maybe it's the same thing with Mike, that Mike was expecting an action movie, and he said got this that's sort of a little bit more slow, you know, a slow burn, where the big moment is a handshake in a back room. If you go into this movie with an open mind, you can come away with some good things.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, I'm watching. I rolled the dice and I got The Godfather. That's pretty cool.
I said that Zach got kind of lucky here, and he hasn't picked this well this blindly since he picked The Family Man for Cage Club.
Oh man, The Family Man.
His first show.
I thought that was I thought The Family Man was The Weatherman, I think. And I wanted to see something involving like archery, and I didn't.
And then, as I do every week, I asked if Mike and Zach had any last thoughts about this movie.
Pretty good. 4 out of 5.
I just had two things running through my mind during this movie. The first one was how much of a hard ass his parole officer seemed, and then just vanished the rest of the movie. Like, I thought it would have, you know, I just really hate when they never check in with their parole officers, and it's totally cool. There's an opportunity in this movie for him to actually go to that guy for some help or something, or trying to figure shit out, and then he just never shows back up.
Well, he was in trouble when he disappeared, and that was a thing. I don't know if even the officer himself even showed up, but he was in serious trouble for not.
Yeah, they swatted his mom's apartment looking for him and everything. Yeah, but that guy never showed up again.
Yeah.
The other thing was, and this is more like, this isn't exactly a serious thing, or else because there just wouldn't be a movie, but it's just like Mark Wahlberg goes to James Caan, and James Caan's like, you know, I'll have you on the machines, but you got to go to school, and it takes a couple of years, this and that and the other thing. Like, couldn't Mark Wahlberg just like try and find like something else to do? Like, did he have to work on the yards with Joaquin Phoenix? Like, I know he really wanted to work with Joaquin Phoenix because he's flashing money, and he really wants money, and he's really like hard up for money, but like the minute he sees that like shady shit is going down, like, he doesn't say anything or do it. Like, he's still complicit, like, he's going along, like, he knows he can get caught, and he's still going along. It just kind of seems like that's not the dude they were setting up.
He's
necessarily
not smart.
It seems like he would be a little more a little smarter than that, but I guess maybe that's the whole point, is that he's a dum-dum or something. Like,
he's just like a good-hearted dum-dum.
Hi, it's Editor Joey again. How is this going? Are you liking this? Is this weird? Is this good? Let me know. Email us watch@cageclub.me. We have an email address. Let me know what you think. Anyway, Zach was talking about, or Zach and Mike were both talking about how Mark Wahlberg is a good-hearted dum-dum, but I was saying he just got out of prison. You know, he doesn't want to go back. He doesn't want to snitch. It's his family. He doesn't really know anyone else. It seems like, in the beginning of the movie, everyone he knows in the world is at that party, and so he's got two different family members offering him a job. You know, everybody who cares about him is reaching out to him. You know, Khan's job is safer and less flashy, but Joaquin Phoenix is like, hey, here's $200 just for taking this car ride with me and staring at my butt from the car window while me and this other dude get naked. It's an easy pick for me. Like, he's going to do that train job.
And who's going to hire an ex-con anyway, outside of his family?
No, I mean, yeah, it would be extremely hard to find something he would feel good about doing, but it would be honest, and, you know, he wouldn't go back to jail. So I understand. Look, I mean, I'm not putting that against the movie by any means. There would be no
You should
movie.
Go watch Les Miserables.
I've seen it. I've seen it. But I was just about to sing a bar, but I'm not
Me
going
too.
There. But no, like, I guess my final word is, like, I don't think this is a bad movie. I just don't think it's close to a masterpiece either. I think it's fine. Like, it's right. It does some interesting things with some very familiar material, you know? So it's, if you're into these kinds of movies, like, it's definitely high up there in this genre, and it's completely unknown. I feel like nobody really knows about this movie. So, you know, spread the word about it. I know people who would like this way more. I mean, I do know two people who like this more than me, but I mean, I feel like I know a lot of people who would like this movie. Like, it feels like a movie like my dad would really enjoy, or my brother, or my other brother. So I would recommend it to, my mom would actually kind of enjoy
it. If you've seen all the other crime movies.
Yeah, it's the whole family affair, right?
Oh, literally a family affair, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Hi, it's Joey again, Editor Joey, you know, as opposed to Podcast Joey, who does not exist at this space in time, but you know that already. I think I made a joke about how it's a real family affair because Mike was just rattling off all the different family members of his who would like the movie, so I was like, real family affair. Laugh. Didn't know where to cut that in, saying it after the fact. Always good to say the punchline after the audience has laughed. Rule number one of showbiz. So anyway, we're moving on to the game now. It's called Pitch a Sequel. Basically, if there was a Yards 2, what would it be? We have 9 different genres. We randomly pick a number between 1 and 9. Everyone gets a different number. Zach goes first as the guest. Sorry to throw him under the bus. He got a 5, which is a gritty reboot. So take it away, Zach.
How grittier? Grittier than it already is. Oh, my God. All right.
Just add Batman.
Yeah, right? After ratting out his family, Mark Wahlberg is ambushed by Frank, has his eyes gouged out. That's how they get to him. They say, you know, you're never going to see anything again. And you're not going to, you know, they take his tongue, too. You're never going to say a thing. And his hearing gets really good. He finds himself in all these dark rooms, all these places, and he hears all these really shady goings on, but he can't tell anybody. So he becomes a vigilante crime fighter, a la Daredevil, and starts taking justice into his own hands. And they call him the Snitch.
But that's perfect for, like, a crime fighter.
Yeah.
Snitch.
It's Joey again. I can't believe I called podcasting show business in the last little clip, but I'm not going back and editing it now. What is said is said. Anyway, I asked Zach what his title is for his movie. This is also something that I ask Mike later, so when he just sort of addends his title onto his thing, that's because I asked him that too. So, past, present, future, what an update this is.
The Snitch. The Yards to the Snitchening.
Joey again, back already before I even expected to be back. I love Zach's idea for the Snitchening, so that's great. I also, at this point in the podcast, wanted to mention that Charlize does die in this movie. I feel like we mentioned that earlier, but did not really give it the credit it deserved, because she keeps dying in all these movies. Toward the end of the movie, she confronts Joaquin Phoenix in their house, and in a fit of rage or passion or something, he pushes her over a balcony and she falls and breaks her neck and basically becomes a puddle of blood and dead body. So, you know, we tease that she died, but we want to give it the recognition it deserves.
I think we actually have to remind them before we sign off, too, exactly how it went down again, because you're right. Like, I think we, like, this is the Charlize podcast, and we totally just like breezed over one of like her most brutal deaths, where she ends up like mangled in her arms in four different, like her arms and legs are in four different directions when she hits the floor. Like that shot of her, like her head is like basically backwards on her body. It's gross.
It's me back again. You know who I said, all right, this is Mike's turn for the game. We got another five. We skipped that one. We got a six. It's one that we did last week. It's horror. I said there's one caveat for Mike. We cannot bring Charlize back from the dead because that's something that Duke did last week for Reindeer Games. So take it away, Mike.
That's okay.
Oh.
That's all right. I actually have, I might have a direction here. So wait. So The Yards 2 as a horror film. All right. So Mark Wahlberg, he's like kind of grief-stricken about everything that's gone down and everything. So like he decides that because of like everything he did and all that shit, like they're gonna let him be the security guard at the yards that's to take the job of the dude Joaquin Phoenix stabbed. All right, so he's on the yards lot, he's going to night school, he's getting his machinist license, he's getting his life on track and everything. At night he hears weird shit, and like sometimes like he'll be patrolling like the yards, and he'll start like sort of like blacking out and shit, and like wake up and like not know where he is and all that kind of thing. So like you come to find out that the yards are haunted, and they're trying to take over Mark Wahlberg and get him to go and like murder the other sort of like train moguls all around. And then at the end you find out that it's been haunted by like one of the oldest train moguls from New York history, like back in like the 1910s, and he's trying to exact his revenge through Mark Wahlberg. And Wahlberg creates a machine that he attaches to one of the trains that when he drives it at a certain speed, in a certain way, it traps the ghost, and he sort of like destroys it, and he lifts the curse. And at the end he goes home, and like you think everything's fine and all that, then like at the last second, like the ghost of the train yard like jumps at him, and it's like, you know, sets up another sequel.
Shut up and take my money.
That's where I'm going. The Yards 2, Yard Sale.
Oh, I was thinking Ghost Train.
I mean, it's a better title. It doesn't really fit, yeah. I guess, but I can't give up on the title.
Yard Sale.
I just like Yard Sale.
It's I'm like not the good family at this comedy game yet. Version.
Hi, it's Joey again. So I got a 7, which is sci-fi. I said it makes sense that a movie that is realistic and grounded as this would spawn a sci-fi sequel. I said that Mark Wahlberg, for some reason, becomes obsessed with astronomy. That, you know, he gets out of prison in this first movie, he starts working some jobs, he wants to go to night school to become an astronomer. He looks up to the skies in Queens and gets really into the stars. Somewhere along the line, you know, he gets really good at this. He goes to a little school outside of Boston. You got to have some kind of Boston connection here. He goes to a little school outside of Boston. That's where he, you know, Harvard, parentheses, Harvard. And he, at some point, hears a voice on the radio. He recognizes it. It's not static. This is not the astronaut's wife. But he recognizes it. He realizes the voice of his dead cousin, Charlize Theron, whom he still loves. And so it's a story about a man's passion for the stars, a passion for his dead cousin. You know, he doubles down and tries to reconnect with Charlize. It's a little bit Frequency, a little bit Interstellar, a little bit Mark Wahlberg at a little school outside of Boston. The Yards 2, no subtitle I went with. Zach suggested Boneyards, which I said was a better title for Mike's. And then he said...
I came up with a new title for mine, if I may. It's a little... Okay, it's more of a horror sequel title. The Yards 2, The Yardening. I'm just glad that yours wasn't about how the train turned into a giant robot named Optimus Train, and together they went and they fought, like...
All right, so you heard all three of our pitches, you heard all three of our titles, or lack thereof, in my case. And so if you like these, or like The Yards, or like the podcast, or like this weird thing I'm trying to do here to salvage this podcast, email us, watch@cageclub.me. We don't have mail today. Not sure if we're ever going to have mail, but we do want to hear from you. We do want to know what you think. That said, we have one other segment on the show, the awards, you know, the golden wallpapers tentatively. But these are, instead of going through at the end and trying to remember what was good, what was bad, we are going to go through film by film and nominate things in real time. In this movie, I nominated it for Best Death. I also threw it in for Best Film since it is a minor masterpiece, maybe. And then I asked if Zach or Mike had anything else to nominate, either good or bad. Doesn't necessarily have to be Charlize related. I said, do you think that Joaquin Phoenix should be nominated for Best Male Non-Charlize Role? And they said yes, so we nominated him as well. And then...
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, especially his turn at the end when they finally catch him and he's like crying and raising his hands in his car and not resisting. And they're like, yeah, I think he concludes the arc nice. And, he's badass in this movie.
Best mumbles?
Yeah, least discernible dialogue.
Least discernible dialogue.
I had one. Best love triangle.
Mm.
I said that I love the idea of a best love triangle because we have best love story, worst love story. Now we have best love triangle. I also added in the love triangle from Mighty Joe Young between Jill, Joe, and Greg.
And you could even do Keanu, the devil, and her, maybe, and Devil's Advocate. I don't know.
Most tasteful incest?
After Zach's joke about most tasteful incest, I mentioned that I was glad that the movie addressed it, because otherwise I would have spent the whole movie and after the movie wondering if there was something there that I was reading too much into or not. So I'm glad that the movie addressed that they actually did get caught having sex or whatever.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad I missed it, man, because that's what was so weird about it. Like, that was another moment for me where I was like, this is where the movie's, like, working, even though I don't understand it, because it's taking relationships in, like, weird areas and stuff, like kissing cousins and things. Like, I was kind of liking it more without the explanation.
I thought it was interesting. It fleshed out the universe for me. It made it just be like, just because it wasn't necessarily plot important, but it was tone important.
Yeah, and I think it was just so obvious that they wanted to get down too. Like the two actors just like looking at each other across the room. I was like, it's so obvious. They needed to, I guess they needed, eventually they need to explain a reason why they don't. More than anything else.
Well, it's better than in movies when, like, two characters ostensibly are interested in each other and there's no chemistry. Like, I'm really glad, yeah, it worked.
Yeah, that's another thing, too, right? Like, there was chemistry and they couldn't... It was, like, taboo. It was forbidden. So, like, there's just an extra level of tension.
Yeah.
I then asked if we should nominate for Best Score / Soundtrack, and we did. And then I asked if we should do Best Director, because we did for Cage Club, I think, Worst Returning Director and maybe one other thing, but that wasn't something that we had really talked about here so far on Watch the Throne.
We don't have that. We haven't done Best Director yet. Like, I don't know. There's a couple we haven't really...
So we didn't really come to a consensus. We sort of held off on Best Director. Still not a category to this date. But I did say that, you know, this isn't the greatest film of the 21st century, as we were kind of joking at one point that it was. But, you know, I love it, and I can see why people would think it's awesome. Somebody was like, hey, I give it 5 out of 5 stars. I get that. So that was that.
Well, what would this movie be the worst at? Where is there anything worst about this movie?
I wouldn't say this is a bad movie, you know, especially what's come before. I'm afraid to score it now on Letterboxd.
I might go to 4.5.
So this is sort of the end of the show, and I thank Zach for being here. I thanked him, honestly, way too many times. I don't know why I thanked him as many times as I did. You know, I was just happy that he was here to watch a movie that I loved, or I thought I loved, or I really liked, a near masterpiece, so on and so forth. Give me some backup ammunition against Mike. We made some Titanic jokes about how I could never let him go. Talked about how Titanic was a minor masterpiece. Mike made some jokes about how he wasn't entirely convinced, but he was just joking because we all like Titanic here. We're not going to say what Zach will be back for. He will be back for the show. He's coming back for a pretty big movie that I forgot Charlize was in. I think we might have also added him to another movie or two aside from that one. So we are doing lots of cool, fun, big things with Zach coming up in the near future. And I also mentioned that since this episode comes out at the end of February, next week, if all goes according to plan, Mike's first episode of his podcast, Third Time's a Charm, should be coming out next week, right?
Coming out on March 3rd, Superman 3. I was going to say I'm going to tease it, but I'm just going to reveal it right now. It's episode 1, featuring Joey, Superman 3.
And so as I do at the end of every show, I encourage you all to go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter. I promoted the episodes that Zach had been on before, the movie that we all love, The Family Man. We all love Freaked on Keanu Club, where Keanu plays Ortiz the dog boy. We all talked about how great those were. You know, if you want to email us, let us know. This is the last time, but this might be the last time that I say anything on here as Editor Joey. So email watch@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of this. Go to facebook.com/cageclub, at cageclubpod on Twitter, and cageclub.me for all shows on our network. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Zach Dazon, and we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.